Hey, good afternoon, Juno. Pat Moore, your host today for Juno Afternoon. We have guests today from the Juno School District. We're going to hear from John Palmas, who's here with a harmony singing workshop this weekend. Michael King and Cindy Birchfield from the Alaskan Brewing Company will drop by. They're going to talk about their newest release, Baltic Porter. And Noah Jenkins will come to us live from Costco as part of the Fill the Boot campaign, which is going on today. It's about 3 minutes, about 20 seconds after 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News. For Juno Afternoon. Weather looks like it's going to stay sunny like this through about midday or maybe late in the afternoon tomorrow, and then it's going to start raining, and it's going to rain through the weekend according to the forecast. We'll see if that holds.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A Native American girl will be allowed to stay with her biological father in Oklahoma despite an appeal by her adoptive parents, KGOU's Kurt Gortney reports.
The South Carolina Supreme Court made its first determination ever on the federal Indian Child Welfare Act, deciding not to reconsider its ruling to let a Cherokee father keep his daughter. The child's adoptive parents, who live in Charleston, had asked the court to rehear the case. Back in July, the court voted 3-2 to return the 2-year-old to Oklahoma. The court wrote, while the adoptive family likely bonded, federal law gives custodial preference to the girl's father, a member of the Cherokee tribe. The Cherokee Nation says the baby was born in Oklahoma to unwed parents. The tribe says the father is a Cherokee Nation citizen who served in Operation Iraqi Freedom and was unaware the mother had put the baby up for adoption. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gortney.
Tribes in the Gulf Coast region are assessing damage and cleaning up after Hurricane Isaac, which was downgraded to a tropical storm. The United South and Eastern Tribes, or USET, organization says efforts were effective. Harold French is senior project coordinator with USET.
This is not new to our tribes along the coast, and they prepare well. They are have skilled people, even though they may not have an emergency manager title put on them by the tribe, they act in that role and act very competently at it.
Tribes were in constant communication. USET Development Director Brandon Stevens says there were many lessons learned from past destructive storms.
You start seeing a hurricane, or you see a blizzard, or even a wildfire that comes together, you want to start throwing all the resources possible at it. But what I think you learned from 7 years ago is that that happened in the same area, is that people started throwing resources, but then it wasn't exactly coordinated, and you start having generators that weren't able to be hooked up, or you have tons and tons of water going to the area, but it needed to be in, say, quantities of trucks or, half-liter bottles, or, you know, this is getting a good picture from the tribes, what they need, how they need it. And then, of course, they're also able to assess and say, well, you know, we didn't need exactly 20 generators. We only needed 5, or we didn't need any at all. So daily, this is a good coordinated effort.
Tribes in Isaac's Path reported mostly flooding, power outages, and high winds. Health workers with the Wisconsin tribe will be hitting the road soon to help children access medical care. Steve Rysom reports.
Ho-Chunk Nation tribal land is spread across several counties. Going mobile allows the tribe to provide medical care to as many people as possible, especially in rural communities where kids are not always getting the health care they need. Dr. Alec Thundercloud is the Ho-Chunk Nation's Executive Director of Health. He says the clinic will also help children who are not members of the tribe.
You look at some of our more rural areas, such as, you know, where we're going to go, Nacusa, Wittenberg. You know, it's very difficult for people in general, community members, not even tribal members, but community members, to access health care, especially when transportation is a barrier.
The Ho-Chunk Nation's obesity rate is 5 times the national average, and 1 out of every 4 members have diabetes. Tribal President John Greendeer says the pediatric mobile clinic will help encourage nutrition and early preventative care.
What we can do at a younger age is start developing the education nutritional avenues for our youth and allow them, you know, the proper dental care. The link between dental care and nutrition is very key here.
The clinic will offer a variety of services, including laboratory testing, immunizations, and health education. I'm Steve Rysom.
On this day in 1916, Chief Aurelius Piper of the Golden Hill Pagasa Indian Nation was born. Known as Chief Big Eagle, he was the hereditary leader of the Connecticut tribe from 1959 until his death in 2008. He was an advocate for Native rights, worked to preserve tribal land, and was a foreign correspondent. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kowanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 5 minutes and 44 seconds after 3 o'clock on a sunny afternoon in Juneau, Alaska. Isn't that a nice thing to say? I love that concept, a sunny afternoon in Juneau, Alaska. Here's two people who always bring sun whenever they go. Julie Staveland and Lori Klein are here. They're both part of the Student Resource Center up on the campus. And this is orientation week, right?
Yes.
So what's shaking?
Well, we had a great week for orientation. We had new students move into housing on Sunday, and then we had orientation Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of this week. We had about 197 students participate, which is a great year for us, and then we wrapped it up with whale watching. So they got all the basic campus information, talked to staff and faculty and advisors, and then we also showed them, you know, don't forget we're in Southeast Alaska and this is in our backyard. So it was great. We had a good turnout.
So, Lori, was this your first time through the orientation process up there?
Actually, I was on campus for about 10 years, 7 years ago.
Oh, okay.
I left about 7 years ago. So it feels like coming home, and the energy that the new students bring is just phenomenal. New and transfer students, we've got incoming 18-year-old freshmen. We've got transfer students in their 20s. We've got returning adult students who are managing families and jobs. We've got international and national exchange students. And just a phenomenal group of students coming in with a lot of energy. Julie and I were talking, this is exhausting and invigorating, this whole this balance of this time of year. And I imagine the students would say the same.
Julie, your office up on campus is always an interesting place to walk through because you always have these boxes of the things that are going to be given away or parts of the package for the orientation.
Yes.
You acquire that stuff throughout the whole year. This is a full-time job, right?
It is. It is. We sort of go, you know, like a hill, up and down, up and down. We've got our peak seasons like right now. We just finished up with orientation, so most of our boxes are gone. But now we'll be prepping for spring orientation and some of the other events in our recruiting cycle is also just starting, so we'll be getting all those supplies in. So, yeah, it doesn't ever really stop. There's always an influx of material and events and fun things to do.
You also do a number of things throughout the year with high school students and with younger students than that,
mm-hmm.
That also bring students to the campus to let them have a look at UAS
yep,
as well.
Yep, we invite local high school students in with the different various groups and clubs at the high schools. We also participate in the local college fairs, and we set up individual campus tours. And I believe the youngest group I've ever helped do a project with was first graders. They came out for
that's when they should
tour.
Be getting ready for college, definitely.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. But usually we do our annual fifth grade event in May, the I'm Going to College event for our fifth graders. So yeah, we work with all age groups.
So, Julie, this is kind of a focus for you, but your duties, Lori, are quite a bit broader than that. You have a big division that you're responsible for lots of different parts
sure.
of the student life scene,
sure.
I think.
We have a variety of resources in the Student Resource Center that are in place on campus to support all students throughout the school year, students who are both on campus and those who are taking classes via distance. Under the Student Resource Center umbrella, we have our health center. We have disability support services and counseling. We have the academic exchange programs, our study away programs. We have academic advising, and which is a rich resource for students. You know, it's sort of like the go-to place. We have career advising, the Native and Rural Student Center, and that desk is the main phone line into campus. So if we don't have the answer, and we sure have a lot of answers, but if we don't, we know who does. And we do a lot of referral and support for our faculty so that we get students connecting with faculty. We get them in class. We get them the resources they need to be successful.
Every year on the campus, there are a bunch of there's a bunch of construction. Usually, it's inside the buildings, and it really doesn't you don't see it so much. But right now, the center of the campus is kind of all wide open with construction gear and everything like that. Can you tell us a little bit about what that's going to look like when it's done? No.
No. Well,
they're looking at each other.
Yeah. You know, campus, it has been a drive-through kind of campus. And while that's convenient in some ways, it's really not very safe and accessible to the pedestrian nature of the campus as well. And so that's what this renovation is becoming. It's really bringing the campus more in line with a pedestrian-focused, safe campus. And so a lot of that construction that's going on now is to eliminate the drive-through piece and put in a structure that will support gathering places and mm-hmm. student thoroughfares that really kind of is student-focused and not traffic-focused.
One of the other things we have to consider, too, is we still need to have access for emergency vehicles to come down in the event of a student needing an ambulance or, you know, putting out a fire or things like that. So there's still going to be some concrete and areas for vehicles to come down, but it's more of a pedestrian corridor is the ultimate purpose.
And then recently, I think they're part of the legislative funding this year, you got money to build a new dorm or to be started on building a new dorm.
Yep,
so that's
going
to be right on the campus as opposed to up on the hill.
It's going to be located, if you're facing the noise pavilion, it's going to be on the right-hand side of the noise pavilion. And they're supposed to be breaking ground in May next year. So within the next year, we're going to be building 60 new beds up there. So it's pretty exciting for us.
So will the students have to go into a lottery in order to be either up away from the campus? I'm wondering what winning is, you know, down on campus or up away.
The initial conversations that I've heard is it'll be the traditional freshmen right out of high school will be on the main campus, and then sort of the sophomores, upperclassmen will be on the one up the hill.
And I think one big savings is that because of where the new dorm's going to be located, you don't have to build food service facilities
Correct.
Into it because that
yep.
can be part yep. of the main campus, which is UAS is very clever in many ways about double-use facilities and stuff like that, like the Activities Center, which is also shared with the National Guard, which I think may be unique among college campuses.
It
That's
is.
A really interesting mm-hmm. Sharing operation, but it works perfectly for
yep,
UAS.
It's a great relationship.
Yeah, I think partially because of the non-traditional weight of the student body.
Yeah.
Do we know how many students are attending this year?
We're in sort of that preliminary phase. The dust has not settled on the start of the term. We will get more solid numbers as we get through the end of next week, which is our end of the second week. But right now, we have, as of last night at 6 p.m., our internal tracking showed a little over 2,500 students, Juno students.
I've heard Katie Bowsler doing a lot of spots on the air, which indicate that there are still openings in some
mm-hmm.
key classes. So it's not too late to, even
right.
though orientation is over, you can still enroll in classes up
right.
on the campus.
Yep.
What's the procedure for doing that this late after orientation and the main part of enrollment?
A lot of our full-time classes, our 3, 4, 5 credit classes are starting this week and next week. And so it may be too late to enroll in those classes. But we have a tremendous amount of classes that start after next week. We call them late starting classes. They run a shorter amount of time. And students can go online, they can come in, they can give us a call to register for those classes. If there are any kind of prerequisites, we work with them to talk about what those are, make sure they've got them covered, and then we can help them with the registration process. So if you're interested, go online. The schedule's online. You can see it, see what's available. A lot of just interesting, creative, fun, fascinating, business-related, I mean, just such a wide variety of classes that the university offers. And we're in the process of prepping for the spring semester, and so students who aren't underway this fall and are interested, the admissions deadline for spring is January 1st,
yep.
and we'll be opening registration for spring classes in
November.
And those will go up online prior to registration opening, and so we welcome everybody to join us in the spring if they can't make this fall.
And Julie, are you already receiving materials to pass out to new students in November for for the big pile around your desk.
Oh, yes.
Well, good. Julie Stavlin, Lori Klein, Student Resource Center up on the University of Alaska Southeast Campus. Thank you for bringing us up to date and inviting us to maybe do a little final enrollment for a class that's been interesting or something like that.
Thanks, Pat.
Appreciate your coming down.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 31st of August, 2012. 1422, on this day, Henry VI became King of England. He was 9 months old, the only child of Henry V. In 1423, the year after he ascended to the throne, English nobles from around the country swore loyalty to this tiny child, and also set up a regency council to make government decisions until he was old enough to do that. And it was about a century and a half later that William Shakespeare wrote about Henry VI, wrote three plays, which were among Shakespeare's earliest. They were big box office successes at the time. These days they're hardly ever performed anywhere, though they contain some quotable lines. It was in the Henry VI plays that Shakespeare said, "Defer no time, delays have dangerous ends." He said, "Suspicion always haunts the guilty mind, the thief doth fear each bush and officer." It's the birthday of William Shawn, born Chicago, 1907, was the editor of the New Yorker magazine for 35 years. He personally edited a great deal that went into the magazine, including Rachel Carson's Silent Spring and Truman Capote's In Cold Blood. And it's the birthday of Maria Montessori, born on this day in Chiaravalle, Italy, 1870. Against her father's wishes, she wanted to study engineering, so she went to a technical school. All of her classmates were boys. After a few years, switched over to medicine, became the first woman in Italy to earn an M.D. degree. As a doctor, she worked with children with special needs, and it was through that work that she became interested in education. She believed that children were not blank slates, that they each had inherent individual gifts, and it was a teacher's job to help the children find those gifts rather than dictate what a child should know. She emphasized independence, self-directed learning, and learning from peers. Here's a poem for today by Jane Shore, entitled The Blue Address Book. Like the other useless things I can't bear to get rid of, her nylon nightgowns, his gold-plated cufflinks, his wooden shoe trees in a size no one I know can use, I'm stuck with their blue pleather address book. It's 26 chapters printed in ballpoint pen, X'd out, penciled in, and after she passed away, amended in his hand, recording, as in a family Bible, those generations born, married, and since relocated to their graves, Abramovitz to Zimmerman. Great uncles, aunts, cousins once removed, whose cheeks I kissed, whose food I ate, are in this book still, alive, immortal, each name accompanied by a face. Fogel, Rose, and Murray, 474 13th Street, Brooklyn, moved to a condo in Boca Raton. Stein, Minnie, sister of Rose, left her Jerome Avenue walk-up for the Yonkers Jewish nursing home. The baby blue cover has a patina of grease, the pages steeped in the cigarette smoke of years spent in my parents' junk drawer. Though scattered in different graveyards, here they're all accounted for. Their souls disperse dust motes in the air that I inhale. The Blue Address Book, poem by Jane Shore from her collection A Yes or No Answer, published by Houghton Mifflin and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. iPad users can download the three most recent issues of Poetry Magazine, celebrating its centennial in 2012, at poetryfoundation.org. Written by Holly Vanderhaar, edited by Joy Biles, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Minutes after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News. Pat Moore hosting today on Juno Afternoon, and my guest is John Palmas, who's doing a workshop on harmony singing at Resurrection Lutheran Church Saturday at 7. Welcome, John.
Hi. Thank you. And it's palms, actually.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, that E in there is left over from when my ancestors came over with William the Conqueror from France to England, and they took the place over, and because they were part of the royal family and they wanted to show, you know, who they were, they kept that E in there.
But cleverly hidden.
Well, they call it, they say palms, but, you know, it's there. Uh-huh. So it's so we can say, you got that wrong.
Okay.
No, it's, see, William the Conqueror's sister was married to a guy named John Palm, so that's where I get my attitude to. Anyway. So, what do you want to talk about?
Well, I thought we might talk about your harmony singing workshop, but okay. If you want to talk about William the Conqueror, it's fine with me.
No, okay, so, yeah, I'm here because I'm giving a singing workshop, and I've done this at the Folk Festival and at festivals in Australia and at the Seattle Folklife Festival for 30-something years. And basically, I have a method. But the reason I'm so interested in it is I love to sing harmony. So I just love to sing. And there's so many people that have a hard time with it, and have a hard time with singing, too, because they've been cut out of it or because they're real self-conscious because people are critical of them. When I was about 13 years old, my brother and sister and I, we sang incessantly. We had to have no singing at the dinner table rules at our house. And we were all singing together in the back of the bus coming home, and one of the neighbor kids was singing with us. And he was singing a little flat or something. It wasn't right. And I told him it wasn't. It didn't sound good. It sounded bad. I probably even went that far. That's about as, you know, negative as I got. I might have said it sounded bad. Anyway, he got off the bus first, and I get off the bus, you know, down the block. And my mother said, "What did you say to Paul Schmidt?" You know, he came home crying to his mother. And all I did was tell him he was singing flat. Well, at that point, I realized that this is a very important thing to people, whether they can or can't do it. And I also realized that a lot of people can't do it. And so I have been trying since then to understand what's going on and what I think is going on. I've asked people, "Can you sing? Can you carry a tune? Are you musical?" And they say, "No, I can't carry a tune. I just don't." And I say, "Well, how do you know if you can't do it? You know, how do you know you can't do it?" Well, my teacher in fourth grade told me just to mouth the words, all right, because I was throwing the rest of the class off. Or my father tells me. So at some critical point in their early childhood, you know, when they were in first or second grade, somebody told them they couldn't do it and they were bad at it and made them feel so bad that they quit trying. Well, if you actually try, you'll find out that almost anything you sing will probably fit in just because we're wired that way. It's just that you might not be singing the melody. You might be singing something else. And harmony gives you license to sing that something else, and it's perfectly okay. Think of it as harmony. And the reason I brought my fiddle is here's one note, do re mi, or I'll do them in numbers, 1 2 3 4 5. So these two notes, this one and this one, they're five notes apart, but they're all part of the same note, really. One is part of the other. The five note is part of the one note. So when I play them together, it's really hard to tell there are two notes there. And when I sing a note, there's more than one note there. So all those notes are floating around on my vocal cords, and it's just a question of how I hold my mouth, what parts of them you hear. So basically, when you tell a child, sing this note, ah, well, first of all, if you're a male adult, the child is not going to be able to sing in your range anyway. So they're going to be trying to sing an octave higher if they even get it. But otherwise, they might sing that fifth note because it's so close. And so how do you know? Well, and then somebody criticizes them and tells them they're doing it wrong. Well, of course they're doing it wrong. You got to learn. So this harmony thing is to basically, I give people two things. I give them a handout which teaches you a little music theory, how to find the chord changes, because as a song moves, it's like an excursion. You start out on the something built on the first note scale. Twinkle, twinkle, little. We just moved to a different chord. Little star, how I. Different chord, four chord, one chord, five chord, one. So I teach you to feel those things and to move when you get to those. So the basic deal is, I'll just give you the whole thing right here. You find one of the three notes of the chord, which is kumbaya. So you find one, three, or five, and you hold on to one of those notes till you get to the end. So let's say I choose one. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch. We gotta change chords, so I'm gonna go down a half step like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. And the reason I only had to sing two notes to sing Amazing Grace is because the first part of the song uses the one chord and the four chord, and that first note of the scale is in both of them. So I only have to change in that one place. So that's what I try to teach people anyway, is how to find the three notes of the chord, how to hold on to them, and change when you feel the chord changes and come back. And you can actually teach that to most people in less than 15 minutes. You know, and what's really exciting is that the first song we sing, usually, particularly if I have a large group, because it works better with more people, somebody catches on if you have a lot of people. And if you only have a few people, it's possible that nobody's going to get it right away. But anyway, it gets better as the hour or so increases. And we're going to do this for about 45 minutes, and then we're just going to sing. So bring your own songs to sing, and we'll figure out how to sing harmony to them. So that's going to be Resurrection Lutheran Church at 7 o'clock tomorrow.
On Saturday night.
And we're going to have refreshments, too.
John, when you were talking about the same kind of thing that happens with children who begin trying to draw when they're in grade school. And very often someone says to them, well, you probably just don't have the talent. I don't think that happens as often now as it did. But there's a wonderful book called Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain that came out several years ago that was written by a woman who was quite upset about the fact that basically she'd been told she could never learn to draw. And so she came up with a method of teaching people that they did have the ability to draw. And it involved things like learning about negative space and turning the paper upside down and drawing drawing the thing upside down so that you didn't look at the shape of what you were doing. And it sounds like what you're talking about when you say get it is that same kind of thing. It's kind of like discovering that you have the innate ability to do this.
Yeah.
But because you haven't exercised that ability, that's what is getting it.
I'm just trying to give you some intellectual understanding of what happens instinctively, and it's all there. It's innate, like you say. It's instinctive to sing. Humans do it. That's something we do. And no other primates, you know, there are some other primates that are vocal, but not like we are. Wow. Anyway, basically trying to give you the intellectual part. The handout is not really important, except that it's nice to have a little bit of education behind your instincts, that's all. And then otherwise, it's just, you just have to practice. And that's the other thing. I try to give people a notion of, well, just put on something and sing. Anyway.
And all of us sing better in the shower because of the wonderful acoustics of tiles. And
the only other thing I'll say is that this is a teaching method I've developed over a long period of time, and it's pretty simple, but it works. And anyone who teaches music or has an interest in music and wants to help their kids learn about music, I think anybody gets something out of it. And singing is fun. So,
John, we're going to close with a piece off of one of your CDs, and mm-hmm. it has an interesting title. It's called The Ballad of Ramblin' Jack Pocklebill.
Yeah,
makes me think there must be something about the canon in here. But anyway.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely about the canon. Well, I'm going to just let you listen to it, but What's in a Song did... it's one of the two National Public Radio pieces on me. So Google John Palmes, P-A-L-M-E-S, and Pocklebill, and National Public Radio, put all those things together and you'll find it for sure, but just a couple of those. Anyway, you'll find the story to the song.
Well, here we go. Join John tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, Resurrection Lutheran, for a workshop on harmony singing.
Thank you.
My name is Ramblin' Jack Pocklebill. I was born in Germany, somewhere not far from Stuttgart, in 1653. And whenever I try to find the words to express what I'm feeling at the time, and then to have to make them rhyme, well, I might as well sing. Dee 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 dee. It says it all, at least it does to me. Dee 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 dee. They all go on forever and forever and forever and forever and forever and forever and forever. Bar, 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 baran. Bar, 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 baran. Take my hand, bar, 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 baran. Bar, 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 baran. Peter, Paul, and Mary ripped off this line from me and made $1 million in 1963. Duke, 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 Duke of Earl. 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 After aerobics, when you're cooling down at the dentist, when he's drilling deep and the nerve's not quite asleep, they play this simple music. Oh, my name is Ramblin' Jack Pocklebill. I was born in Germany, somewhere not far from Stuttgart, in 1653. And whenever I try to find the words to express what I'm feeling at the time, and then to have to make them rhyme, well, I might as well sing. Dee 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 dee. It says it all, at least it does to me. Dee 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 dee. Thank you.
inviting you to join me for live conversation and music with cellist Zool Bailey on Afternoon Classics, Friday, September 7th on KRNN. About Bailey's performances of Bach's solo cello suites, which he'll play in Juno the next evening, reviewers have said they are an alternately serious and joyous musical journey. His dance movements emerge with boisterous exuberance, and his virtuosity is of the aristocratic kind. That's Zool Bailey, live with me in the KRNN studio at 102.7 on Friday afternoon, September 7th, sometime between 1 and 3 p.m.
It's 25 minutes to 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News. Pat Moore, your host today for Juno Afternoon. My next two guests have brought visual aids with them, which is always wonderful. This happens every once in a while around here. The Alaskan Brewery has introduced, I guess, as well, tomorrow, September 1st, right? They're introducing a new beer, and we have samples of it here in the studio, so you'll be able to sip along with us over the radio, so prepare your palates. So I'm here with Michael King and Cindy Birchfield. Michael is a brewer at the brewery, and Cindy's the brand manager and does things like design the labels and all that sort of stuff, which makes you quite an artist.
Oh, well, I get to work with some wonderful artists here in Juneau to do that artwork.
So, Michael, what's the new beer?
Alaskan Baltic Porter. And it's not new. It's come back.
It's a return.
It's a return.
It's back by popular demand.
Okay. Right.
So what makes this a porter?
Porter is a darker beer, but tends to lean heavier on a more chocolatey side than the more roasted or acrid coffee kind of flavors.
Okay.
There's many subtle levels of gray and flavor there, but you'll get hints of chocolate when you taste this.
Okay. Are there? Can you name some famous porters or anything so we'd have kind of a place to stick this?
You might have heard of the smoked porter.
Yeah, I know you have that. Guinness is a porter, right?
No, that's a stout.
That's a stout.
It's
big
a stout.
Difference.
What's the difference?
Guinness has got a more drier, acrid, roasted coffee flavor to
okay,
it.
Okay, so that's mm-hmm. the stouts.
Right.
Okay,
yeah, there's more mouthfeel to the stouts versus the porters.
Okay.
And I would say a really commonly known, kind of world-famous porter is Samuel Smith's Taddy Porter. That's good stuff, and that's a fine example of the beer, of the basic porter style.
So this is the base of the porter. Now, what makes it Baltic?
Well, historically, many years ago when they were, from one point or another, it was being shipped to foreign countries over the ocean. It takes a long time to get from one place to the other. So they had to brew kind of a porter with a higher alcohol content and hop usage to endure the duration of the voyage so that it wouldn't spoil on the way there.
And so that combination of more hops and a little higher alcohol content is what makes this a Baltic porter then?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah, now, somewhat similar to the India Pale Ales were a little bit higher alcohol, a little bit higher hop. And this just went a different direction, went up to the Baltic state.
Okay. So we need to get a sample of this so that we know what we're talking about. Could you get one of those bottles and an opener and right next to the microphone, move it around if you need to. I want to hear this action happen.
Okay, here we go.
Excuse me, only the finest bottle
welcome
opener.
Welcome to 2012.
There.
There we go.
That's
all
the
right.
Sound of a bottle opening, yes.
2012, here we go.
Okay.
Shall I pour some samples?
Oh, I certainly think you should. By the way, I should mention that quietly in the background, Jeff is here sort of supervising the operation.
Okay to me.
Yes, it's Jeff approved.
Okay. Cindy.
Thank you very much.
Okay. And sorry, folks. I got one more to pour.
Michael's very focused. He's a TAM certified server.
Thank you very much.
Techniques in alcohol management. We're,
oh, yeah?
We're all certified.
Right. Cheers.
Well, cheers indeed.
Cheers. Ding.
Here's 2012.
Yes. Thank you, everybody, for wanting to take this guy back into the world. Okay. Should we talk about tasting here?
Yeah, what are we tasting?
Okay. This beer is super complex. It's got a lot of flavors in it. Sometimes you can even pick more up if you let it breathe, let it warm up. First thing you're going to get, I think, right off is vanilla.
Mm-hmm.
This beer...
There's an overtone, definitely.
we use an unbelievable amount of real gourmet vanilla beans. Hmm. I mean, we don't use extract or anything. We use the real thing. And believe it or not, the volume of this beer this year was substantial enough so that we're talking on the order of thousands of vanilla beans, and we had to hand chop them.
Where did they come in from?
I believe these are all Madagascar vanilla beans.
Okay.
And
and they have to be hand chopped?
Yeah. Yeah.
You're standing there with big knives on a cutting board?
I would say we as not only did the brewing department do this, but the lab crew helped out a lot too. Specifically Mr. Brian Ross. He was up there for hours chopping away.
Huh.
Quite a few of us lent our hands into this. And, yeah, we hand-chop thousands of vanilla beans, and they're used at different points during the brewing process. Some of it goes in the boil, and then some of it we put directly into the fermenter. So as the beer ferments and alcohol develops, it leaches out a different type of vanillin from the pod and the seeds, so you get a different vanilla character there.
Mm-hmm.
Also, during fermentation, we add sweet black cherries. And as it warms up, you can kind of pick that up. Generally, I start getting that flavor as it ages. So when fermentation's done, we age it on French oak, which also, when it's toasted, you get another vanilla character. If you think of bourbon, that bourbon flavor, mm-hmm. you know, you get from kind of oak-aged beers. Well, that bourbon flavor, in my opinion, is vanilla. And so it's sort of like this trifecta of vanilla combined with maybe some light cocoa notes, chocolatey. There's some heat in there from the higher alcohol levels.
I've detected that. Now, where does the chocolate thing I'm tasting come from? What causes that?
From a significant amount of specialty malts that we use in combination, kind of works its way in there. There is, you know, chocolate malt in there. There's also a lot of caramel malts. And the whole kind of flavor wave is just hopefully melds together so that you can enjoy it.
So, Michael, is this like a planned operation, or is it do you just start doing things, or do you sit down and you say, okay, we're going to have 0.7 grams of vanilla at this stage of the beer or whatever? How planned versus what creative is the process?
Well, the way this particular beer worked out is originally I just kind of put it together in my own mind and brewed it on our one barrel system.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is really stage one of all of our beer development.
Right. The very first one barrel that I brewed did not taste as divine and clean as this.
And this is divine and clean, I have to say.
That's a team effort coming into this.
Exactly. Yeah. And I would say that the execution, the development, the prompting, the help, it's a team effort. And
so everybody in the brewery is tasting this stuff and saying, Michael, no, not here, or Michael, that's great, or whatever, right? They're feeding it back to you?
And that happens in the break room, right?
It happens in the break room. It happens through many facets of the brewery as a whole.
Yeah, the beer goes on tap out of the one-barrel system, only available in our break room. So the crew and a few special guests may get to try it in the break room and offer input to the brewer as well as the brewing committee.
Yes.
Okay. The brewing committee. So a beer at the
those
brewery.
Are committee meetings. You don't mind staying a little longer.
My kind of committee meeting.
Michael's a big part of that committee, as well as other leaders within the brewing and production staff.
Yeah, I would like to stress that definitely the evolution of this beer is attributed to the entire brewery as a whole. I mean,
yeah.
a beer doesn't sell itself. It takes people working hard. It doesn't design beautiful labels or market itself. It certainly doesn't put itself in a bottle. There's from the root to the fruit, it takes the entire brewery to make something special. And as a beer evolves, it feels good to be a part of that family.
So Baltic Porter is going to be available starting September 1st.
Well, actually,
it's available now.
We surprise.
Okay.
It's available today.
Okay.
So you can find it's actually sampled on tap there at the brewery, and actually you'll find it all over town.
Okay, so the
on the shelf.
The pubs have it around town.
Yeah, pubs have it on tap.
Good. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And just keep asking if they're pouring through something else. Just encourage them to put that Baltic Porter on tap.
Okay. Now, when you guys came out with Perseverance Ale this last winter, you told us that you should probably put that down, that it would lager longer and it would mellow over time. Is this going to do the same thing?
Yeah, you can. This beer definitely ages, in my opinion, well.
So you'd want to put this one down maybe and try it. How long?
I would say buy a case, drink half now, drink half later. I don't know. You can take your time with the rest of the bottle.
The problem I have now is that my case of Perseverance is getting whittled away. I put it down a year ago, but then I have these guests who come up from outside, and I say to them, oh, you've got to try this. And so
Now it's when you have to say, are you truly worthy?
You know, I'll be the first to admit that my wife actually had to hide our last case of Perseverance Ale in our storage unit to keep me out of it.
Yeah. And where's that storage unit?
I can't tell you that. It's top secret. I don't even know.
You see, he's not permitted to know.
No, I'm not.
Incredible. Alaskan Brewery, let's see, Baltic Porter, it's available around town and I guess around the country. Are you already exporting it out of state?
Yes, it is going down south.
So it is, okay. Mm-hmm. I understand you're all the way down to Texas and you're almost to the Mississippi River now?
We are. It's not yet in Texas. Sorry, Texans that are listening in online.
Tough.
But you will find it in almost all of the, we're in 14 states total, and you'll find it in most of the newest markets as well, except for Texans, but they're almost on board.
Well, outstanding. So people are certainly invited to go over to the brewery, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention the tip jar on the counter, because the most wonderful thing that you guys, one of the most wonderful, well, besides brewing incredible beer, that tip jar, every year the employees choose a charity.
That's
and
right.
They empty that baby out, and it all goes to one charity.
That's right. It's the American Red Cross this year.
Just wonderful of you to do that.
They've been a splendid partner in other fundraising events through the course of the year, and we're very pleased to be working with them.
So if you go over and have a Baltic Porter, then don't forget that over there to the left side of the bar, on the end of the bar, is a big jar that you can drop a buck or two into, and it'll go to a good cause.
Absolutely.
Michael,
every dime. Thank you.
Michael, Cindy, thank you so much for bringing the beer down to us and for bringing all these wonderful brews to Juneau, Alaska.
Not a problem.
There still seems to be a little in the bar. Bottles. Should we leave that behind?
Well, I'm almost certain with your new recappable bottles that we can probably store it and maybe lager it over time.
Oh, the new cryo top.
Oh, I bet that happens.
Spirit of Youth celebrates teenage Alaskans who are making our communities better places to live. They give their time, their hearts and minds, their passion, their creativity. Now, hear their stories.
The Fiddleheads are an all-youth band from Petersburg in Southeast. Bluegrass and Irish folk tunes are their forte. They play traditional songs and they write some of their own. And their many players are both friends and family.
My name is Erin Funt. I play the violin and I'm 12 years old.
I'm Kelsa Sproul and I play the violin and I sing and I'm 13 years old.
I'm Paige Eddy. I play the violin and I sing and I'm 15.
I'm Hannah Funt and I play the guitar and I sing and I also play the bass.
I'm Corinne Sproul and I'm 11 and I play the guitar.
I'm Cole Sproul and I play the violin and mandolin and I'm 9 years old.
I'm Kaylee Eddy and I play the guitar and I'm 13 years old.
Right now, the Fiddleheads are warming up before an evening performance at the 38th Annual Alaska Folk Festival in Juneau. Despite being young, they've been here before, both last year and once a few years back. That said, these kids are pretty cool about it all.
It's kind of scary, but it's nice because we don't know anybody. So, yeah.
Last year when we played here, and even 5 years ago, everybody was really... I don't know, happy to hear us, so it was nice.
I'm Shanna Sheehy.
Give a young person you know a boost by recognizing the good things they're doing. Nominate at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Alaska State Division of Behavioral Health.
We're 10 minutes to 4 here at KTOO Juneau, and very interesting activity going on all afternoon today, and I believe it goes into the weekend. Noah Jenkins is online with us to tell us about Fill the Boot. You there, Noah?
I am, yes.
Good.
Thanks for having me on your show.
What boot are we filling, and what are we filling it with?
So the local Firefighters Union and Capital City Fire and Rescue teaming together, and we are raising money for the Muscular Dystrophy Association. And we're collecting donations in our old Stinky Fire boots and to send up to the Anchorage office of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. And the money that we raise, all of it stays in Alaska, and it helps the kids with muscular dystrophy get to summer camps that they otherwise wouldn't be able to go to, or to see specialists that fly up from Seattle to see them in Anchorage, or to fly down to Seattle to see the specialists.
So, Noah, the note I got when I called, you're on your cell phone, but I said you were working at Costco?
Yeah, we're at the Anchor Electric parking lot.
Okay, and how's it going?
It's just going great. It's every year, this is, I don't know, the fifth or sixth year we've done it, and the generosity of the people in this community always blows me away. And once again, the cash is just streaming in from the ashtray full of pennies to the occasional $100 bills. It's pretty impressive.
So where else will the boots be?
Super Bear. There's a crew out at the Super Bear parking lot on Mall Road, and they're collecting as well. And they'll be there until 6 o'clock. We'll be here until 6 o'clock. And then again tomorrow from 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock we'll be in the same areas.
Okay, so till 6 o'clock tonight, people can drive by Costco, right across the street from Costco there. You're in the Anchor Electric parking lot. And
that's
the
right.
The boot will be held out to the window. They don't even have to get out of their car or anything like that.
That's exactly right, yep.
And so they can just reach into their wallets and get that $100 bill or the $1,000 or the $5,000 bill that they've been holding for this purpose and just slip it into the boot and be done with it in one quick swoop there.
That's exactly right. It's pain-free.
Okay, and then and you take checks as well?
We do take checks, okay. Made out to the Muscular Dystrophy Association,
but
MDA.
Probably not credit cards, right?
No credit cards, no. The website probably does.
Maybe you could tie it on the shoelace or something.
Yeah.
So are you guys in full – I haven't seen you out there yet today. Are you in full fire gear when you're standing
up? We are. We're not wearing – it's the weather's cooperating this year, so we're not wearing our coats. Last year was quite a wet weekend, but – but, yeah, we're out in our helmets and pants and boots.
It's good you mentioned weather because I just got an updated forecast. And,
oh, yes?
Yeah, and so here's the take. As of, they date it as 4 o'clock, but that it's actually out at 3:52, so we're good
uh-huh.
here. So for tonight, partly cloudy. The lows are going to be 39 to 44, so probably the tomatoes aren't going to freeze. Southwest winds 10 miles per hour this evening. Those will turn around to the southeast late, and then that'll increase the clouds. And the rain is probably not going to start until tomorrow afternoon. So you guys probably being off the street by the time it starts to drizzle a little bit.
Good deal.
Highs around 55 tomorrow, so don't put the jackets back on. Southeast winds will continue 10 to 20 miles per hour. And then Saturday night, thank you for the weekend weather forecast, rain. Lows around 47, southeast winds 10 miles per hour. Sunday, mostly cloudy, chance of showers. That's better than rain. I think that's better than rain. Highs around 53, southwest winds 10 miles per hour, and then Sunday, mostly cloudy with chance of showers again. Labor Day through Tuesday, rain is likely. So probably the good weekend day is going to be Sunday, it's looking like. But the rest of today is going to be fantastic, and tomorrow up until probably sometime in the afternoon when the rain finally catches up with us, it'll be equally wonderful. So.
Yes, and we're going to take advantage of the good weather and continue to raise the money.
Noah, who's collecting over? Do you know, happen to know the names of the guys that are collecting over at Super Bear?
Jesse Hay is over there. Ed Quino is over there. And some of the new recruits and volunteer live-ins, I think, are over there.
Oh, okay. So they're really covering the whole parking lot. It's going to be easy to find them out there.
It'll be easy to find them. Big red fire trucks.
Good enough. So are you working alone at your stop?
No.
Oh, you got...
No, there's three of us here.
Oh, all right.
We got John and Nathan and myself here.
Okay. And once again, all this money that you're collecting goes for children who have muscular dystrophy. The money is used in state and passes through you guys, and you are wonderful to do this work and to make sure that people have the opportunity to support this worthy cause.
Well,
Noah,
thank you.
I wish you good luck. You better get back there and man the boot, and I hope the next person who drives up drops a C-note into the stack.
So do I. Yeah. Thanks for letting me on the show.
You bet. See you later.
Have a great weekend. Bye.
The music of Zool Bailey, who will be performing in concert on Saturday, September 8th at 7:30 p.m. at the UAS Egan Library. The concert is a wonderful collection of Bach cello concertos. So in honor of the fact that the fire guys are out there with the boots, here's a little closing music. There's no Juno Afternoon on Monday due to the holiday, so the TED Radio Hour will replace Juno Afternoon.
You keep saying you got something for me, something you call love, but confess, you've been a messin' where you shouldn't have been a messin', and now someone else is getting all your best. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days, these boots
doggone walk all over you.
You're in tune with KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas, and we also broadcast on translators. K276AF at 103.1 in the Valley and Auk Bay, Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269AO at 101.7, Gustavus 88.1, K201AM, Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K220BT Hoonah at 91.9.